What I'm going to do is introduce all of the speakers first, and then I ask that you hold questions for the end. I will be asking for all of you to speak into our handheld microphone. I'll bring that to you. If you would just raise your hand during the Q&A, I'll bring that to you. So let me introduce our panel. First, we will hear from Jeffrey Gordon. Jeffrey earned his master's degree in applied behavioral sciences at the University of Kansas, and he's currently working on his doctorate under the supervision of Dr. Glenn White. And his research interest focuses on designing and implementing sustainable training programs for consumers with physical and intellectual disabilities in terms of their decision-making as it relates to negotiating ADA accommodations and using behavioral economic principles to evaluate people choosing in their decision-making behaviors. So we welcome you to the panel. Next, we'll hear from a combo. We'll hear from Amy Pilley and Tony Cahill. So Amy joins us from the University of New Mexico. She's a public health researcher and project evaluator at the university at their Center for Development and Disability, and she's also with their health policy division. So we welcome you, Amy, and I know that you'll be sharing that time slot with Dr. Tony Cahill. He is the director of the Division of Disability and Health Policy in the University of New Mexico School of Medicine and a professor of public administration in their School of Public Administration. So welcome. Next on the panel, we will hear from Mara. Oh, there you are. If you want to come up here, it's up to you. So Mara joins us to give us a little more background on integrated health promotion. She's a doctoral student in movement studies at the disability program at Oregon State University, and she has her MPH in health promotion and health behavior. And she's currently researching self-compassion and physical activity for individuals with disabilities. So we look forward to that presentation. And then wrapping us up on the panel will be Aaron Siebert. Oh, hello, good. I like it when all the speakers are compliant and join us up on the panel. It's wonderful, thank you. Good first step. Hopefully we'll be good on the time, too, so you're giving me hope. Anyway, well, Aaron has a strong background in adapted and general physical education with a BS in kinesiology from the University of Wisconsin and an MS in exercise and sports science from UW-La Crosse. And she's a doctoral candidate at Oregon State University, currently pursuing her PhD in adaptive physical activity. And she has an MPH in health promotion and health behavior. And she anticipates graduating in June 2016. And she plans to do a postdoc full-time with researching and teaching. So we welcome everyone to today's panel. Without further ado, I'll pass it over to you, Jeff, and we'll get us started.
Okay, so this study is entitled A Single Subject Analysis of an Online Self-Advocacy Skills Training Program. We were originally going to look at an online in-person self-advocacy skills training program, but because Dr. White has been ill over the past several months, we've only been able to conduct the online analysis of this. I also have nothing to disclose with this study. So students with disabilities in post-secondary education are a population that face barriers to completing their post-secondary education at greater rates than their non-disabled peers. For example, recent data has shown that approximately 30% of students with disabilities that are enrolled in post-secondary education, only 12.5% of those complete their degree. So self-advocacy skills has been one way in which students with disabilities have been able to obtain these accommodations. So the disability literature has noted that self-advocacy skills have been used to help gain access to different environments, such as the educational, transportation, and other areas of the community, such as housing. So today we're going to focus more on that, more on the educational aspect of these. When students engage in self-advocacy skills, we also find that it helps them to identify useful resources. It helps them to achieve personal goals as well as reduce barriers that occur. In doing so, they increase the skill set to further help their advancement. advancement through their education. So training self-advocacy skills has been primarily used with the direct instruction method. To train self-advocacy skills using direct instruction, there are normally 7 steps that are taken. First, the target behaviors are described by the trainer. Second, the trainer demonstrates the skills. Third, the student asks questions to clarify those different skill sets. After this, the student rehearses the skills either with a trainer or with another student. Feedback is provided to the student. The student is then allowed additional practice until mastery, and then they are trained for generalization, which means they are trained so that the skills can occur in different settings. So within education, the benefits of using self-advocacy has been duly noted. Much of the seminal work was conducted by Rumlow and Rosler and their colleagues. They examined how students use conflict resolution skills to negotiate accommodations with their professors when the professors had originally rejected their accommodations for the classroom accommodations. So you had situations in which the professors would not agree to allow them some sort of classroom accommodation, and as a result, they needed to resolve that conflict so that they can better achieve their academic goals. So they use parts of this direct instruction process to enhance those skills within the students to help them better obtain their accommodations. So more recently, White and Bowen, Walker and Tex looked at how to adapt the 7-step direct instruction process with college students to better train them to use self-advocacy. Both of these studies found that the students were able to acquire self-advocacy skills needed to request accommodations from disability support staff using an in-person training. So the study was beneficial in that it showed how the self-advocacy skills and how self-advocacy training can be adapted, or how the direct instruction can be adapted to further adapted to train self-advocacy skills. It also shows how broader behaviors can be broken down into smaller components. What we have found is that, in general, the target behaviors that are focused on are defined as communication skills, leadership skills, self-determination skills, self-awareness skills. And though these skills are all beneficial, sometimes they are very hard to define. So by breaking them down into smaller components, it helped to improve the students' demonstrations of the skills because they were able to break them down and more easily acquire them. These studies still have some limitations. For example, both studies use some form of single subject design, which is not a limitation, but it doesn't allow for the full effect of the training to be evaluated on a broader level. So these are both on individual levels. Additionally, the Walker and Test study does not include a complete data set on each of the skill assessments, so we are not sure as to the full effect of the treatment. Also, validity reports on the training stated that although the students did feel the skills were beneficial, they felt that the in-person training took too long to complete. On average, the in-person training took 1.5 days to complete, and because of this, it took a considerable amount of time for each of the students to complete the training. So in recent years, there's been a move to try to adapt these skills trainings to a more convenient way of adapting or using them so that students can use them in a variety of settings. So recently, Cease Cook developed a CD-ROM-based self-advocacy skills training program, which students could take with them and use whenever they needed. They found that this was highly effective because the students were able to use the CD-ROM drives to target those specific skills that they thought were needed to help them request accommodations. More recently, Dr. White and his colleagues developed the Access to Success Online tutorial, which helped to adapt the 7-step, further adapt the 7-step negotiation, direct instruction and negotiation process. For an online delivery. data from the group pilot studies, though, showed that it was inconsistent. The study looked at both knowledge and skill sets and found that though knowledge increased some, the skill sets were still not levels needed for the students to master each of the skill sets. So the purpose of the study was to evaluate the online version of the Access to Success training. The single subject design that we are using will better allow us to identify which components or target behaviors the students are having difficulties with. Additionally, it will allow for future revisions to be made of the training to improve on the implementation of the online version of the Access to Success training. So we had several participants in the studies. We had four student participants, all with physical learning or sensory disabilities, who agreed to participate. We had two university staff members. They were used to help engage students in role-play scenarios. And then we had a consumer empowerment team, which helped to develop the materials and different scenarios. The study took place at our research center in a conference room that was set up with computers as well as other recording equipment so we can view and assess their demonstration skills. So the materials that we used were the Access to Success online tutorial, which included a knowledge-based tutorial and online tutorial. Further down the line, we also had an Access to Success PowerPoint tutorial, which was a replication of this, and I'll get more into how we're going to use that later. Adobe Connect presentation software was used. This was loaded on the computer so that we can track students' progress throughout the training, make sure that see if they were using the training, how they were using the training, how long they were taking to use the training, and collect some other data. We had 43 different role-play scenarios that could have been selected that the students could use to practice their skills in three different checklists to assess the students' behaviors as well as the trainer and staff members' behaviors. So the target behaviors that we were focusing on were opening a meeting, so related to introducing yourself to the university staff member, making a request for accommodation, so a process that the students would use to request accommodations, asking for suggestions, so when requests were rejected, how do you, going back to the rum roll rostler, how do you negotiate those different accommodations, asking for different referrals, so if a staff member could not provide those accommodations, providing information of somebody who could help provide the accommodations, action planning, which is going through and making sure the process of getting the accommodations is correct. We had summarizing the meeting, which is making sure that everything in the meeting is fully discussed and that everything is covered, and then closing the meeting is a basic salutation of closing the meeting. So mastery criteria was defined in this study as the student engaging in 80% of the skills across three consecutive sessions for newly defined behaviors. So if the behavior was something that they had not come into contact with, we would only ask that they engage in it 80% of the time. Once they had acquired it, we bumped that up to engagement in the skill at 90% or greater for mastery. So we had two independent observers collect data to assess, as we mentioned, the student's demonstration skill, also reliability and procedural fidelity. Okay. So we used a pretest post-test assessment and a multiple baseline cross behaviors design. The experimental procedures, we use first a 12-question pre-knowledge assessment to assess their knowledge of federal disability legislation, and we had a pre-skills assessment in which the student would engage in four role-play skills with the staff member to determine what level they were engaging in. After they would complete the KBOT and the SBOT, or the knowledge-based tutorial and the skills-based tutorial, and then complete a similar post-knowledge and skills assessment. So the results showed that the knowledge assessment was, in general, pretty effective. Students, on average, during the pretest, scored about 7 to 8 for the questions correctly on their pre-knowledge assessment, and post-knowledge assessment increased by about 3 to an average of about 11. So we saw increase of 3 responses, or about 27% on average per student. So these are the data for participant one. I'm going to just scroll through the data real quick and then provide you a summary. So these are the data for participant one, two, three, and four. So what we see here is that although the students did acquire some of the skills, they didn't acquire all of them to the rate at which we would consider that they had mastered the skills. For most of the parts, the skill engagement occurred at moderate to very low levels, and also the data were highly variable, indicating that they were not able to fully discriminate between each of the specific skill sets. So some of the benefits is that we did find that the knowledge tutorial was very effective. Also, using the single subject design did allow us to see what different components of the training were effective and weren't effective for future analyses. There are also several limitations. For example, though knowledge is important, that skill engagement with the staff member was a primary skill set that we were looking at, and they weren't fully able to acquire those skills. So what we are going to do next is, instead of moving to the online in-person training with the feedback that we had, we're going to now implement a PowerPoint tutorial. The reason why we're going to do a PowerPoint tutorial with these students is because PowerPoint tutorial provides us with a manipulable analog for the online training. So we've adapted the online training to a PowerPoint tutorial that will allow the students to complete it until they master it. So we're going to test and retest the PowerPoint tutorial until they can actually master the skills. After that, we will compare the effects of the online and PowerPoint tutorial to create a better online system so that they can attain their or acquire their self-advocacy skills for requesting accommodations. This will help because it will make it to where the in-person training is not as important of a focus. Instead, it will be used more in probe-based fashion, so if students are having difficulties engaging in each of those skills or in one or two of those skills, they can be trained on one specific skill or two specific skills, depending on which skill they need. That is it.